going all the way down to Alabama. And Gordon Telpin, who has witnessed himself at least a half dozen total solar eclipses, he joins us now.
Pretty cool.
Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Am I right? 6 total eclipses for you?
No, sir. I've been to 3. I was I went to 2 in Africa and 1 on a cruise in the Mediterranean Sea.
Wow. How about you? I don't know. I must have seen double. I don't know where I got that 6. Well, you have to be excited. And what is your fascination with total solar eclipses, by the way?
Well, I'm an amateur astronomer in general, Scott, and I'm also kind of a NASA fan. You know, I've been following the NASA program for a long time. And I've wanted to get to a solar eclipse in a long time, and it's an amazing celestial event to witness with your own eyes and witness with your friends and family. So I finally had the opportunity to go to one in 2001, and I kind of got hooked after that. So, you know, I went to another one in 2002. Another one in 2006. Then the timing and the location of the eclipses didn't really allow me to get to another one prior to this 2017 eclipse. So I'm really excited about this, and I've been planning for this for a long time.
Well, Doctor, we are fortunate enough to be within driving range of totality, Southern Illinois. We're in Central Illinois. We're a few hours away from a town that you probably heard of by now, Carbondale.
Yes, I have it up on the map in front of me.
Yeah, and the strange thing is how rare these are for any one spot to be part of a total eclipse is very rare. I thought I read somewhere it's 370 years on average.
Yeah, what that number is, Scott, it's kind of interesting. You know, eclipses do happen in a pattern, but they do move all over the Earth. So the little, the little statement that people say is if you went outside of your house and stood in your backyard and you waited for a solar eclipse to come, the chances of one coming is about every 375 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of just a big average, but it's not really as simple as that, but it's kind of a cute way to talk about it.
But, and here Carbondale's going to have another one in 7 years.
That's correct. Yeah, that's just the way... The way the shadows match up for this period of our lives, you're going to have 2.
All right, so tell me about the app you have created, and I have downloaded on my phone.
Okay.
Talk about that, and what people, if they, you don't need it for the total eclipse. I mean, here we're going to have, I think, 90, what did Doc Womack say?
97%.
93.
It was 93% because 7%
coverage.
Yeah.
But your app will come in handy for people viewing it here in Central Illinois, right?
No, it's not, Scott.
No,
so my app
twice.
Is
Keeps
really
going.
Only developed if you're going. It's only useful if you're going to be in the path of totality. It is not useful for people in the country who are just going to see the partial phases. And the reason is, though, you see, the partial phases do not require crucial timing. So when first contact happens, which is when the moon first touches the sun, I mean, if you miss that by 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 seconds, it's not a big deal because really the time for first contact is a mathematical time. When you look at the sun at that point, you won't even see the moon moving across the sun. It takes 20 to 40 seconds for you to see the first bite. So first contact and fourth contact, the end of the eclipse, is not crucial for timing. But what is crucial for timing is when totality begins, so at second contact, and then when it ends at third contact. So my app, with its sophisticating timing sequence, requires having a second contact time for all of the announcements to line up. You understand? So it's not crucial and not necessary for partial eclipse observers, but for people who are going to get to the path, precise timing is key, and that is where my app shines.
All right, so you've witnessed 3 total eclipses. Were they all 3 unencumbered, no clouds? I mean, you saw them clearly?
Yes, sir. Now, that is a great question. Scott, when you're picking an eclipse to go to overseas, one of the things you take into consideration almost first is the weather of the country you're going to travel to. So the first eclipse I went to in Africa, the reason I picked that one, it was a long eclipse. It was about 3 minutes and 35 seconds. But it was in June, which is in the middle of the dry season in Africa. So the chances of having clouds or rain were basically zero. Kind of the same thing in Africa in 2002. And then in the Mediterranean Sea, you're on a boat. And so the captain can kind of try to cruise to an area of clear weather. So you had better chances with those three eclipses to see it. Now, in the United States, with our southern weather pattern, everybody this weekend will be watching the weather patterns and see where the rain and where the clouds is going to be. So for us in the U.S. southern weather pattern, we have to be careful. But it's still a wonderful thing to have an eclipse like this crossing this much populated landmass.
Yeah, I talked to somebody whose son, they're going to gather around Carbondale, but he said if they'll study the weather, and if he has to drive hours to see it with a clear sky, he's going to. So talk about your experiences with a solar eclipse and some of the things we can hopefully we'll see. I want you to touch on shadow bands. When I saw your video, I thought, well, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. So there are many, many layers to enjoying a solar eclipse. I mean, one is just understanding the timing. And so it's kind of fun to be able to calculate all the contact times and know exactly when it's going to happen. Because, I mean, this is a very precise geometrical celestial event. It is going to happen at the predicted times. And it's not going to be late. It's not going to be early. So then, as you're going through the partial phases, the time between first contact and second contact, you will feel the temperature drop. The temperature will drop 10 to 12 degrees Fahrenheit, and it does it slowly through the whole process. It's not right at the end. And if you're aware of that, you will sense it. And that's one of the wonderful things about my app, because I love the partial phase phenomena. My app announces to observe for the changes in ambient temperature. So you're kind of thinking about it with your friends and family. You know, you ask yourself the question, does it really feel like it's getting cooler as the partial phases progress? And it will. And then there's a great call at 8 minutes before totality. It will ask you to observe for changes in animal behavior. And what I mean by that is if you're in a natural environment, like in a field, the crickets will start to think that nightfall is coming, so they will start chirping like crazy about 5 to 8 minutes before totality, because even though your eyes are not perceiving that much change in the lighting at that point, the animals are, so they think night is coming.
Patty's not buying it. Patty is shaking her head.
I'm not denying that it could happen. There's that.
Think about it. It's going to get dark.
This is the element that probably puts fear in some people when it happens, and especially before we knew what was going on.
The birds are going to be
dusty. Because all of a sudden, your animals are acting different.
All right, Doctor, continue.
Yeah, so they are. In fact, I'm doing a little experiment where I'm not going to be in an area where there's going to be chickens, but I know some people have a chicken coop, and they are in the path, and I sent them a video camera that they're going to set up, and they're going to videotape the chickens about 15 minutes before totality and then right after totality. And the chickens should go into their chicken coop when it gets dark. That is going to be a really good video.
Oh, that's
cool. All right. And will you have that up on your website that we're going to tell people about?
I will. After the eclipse, they'll mail me back the video camera. And if we have chickens going into the chicken coop, I definitely will post that.
All right.
So shadow bands, Scott, you asked about shadow bands.
Yeah.
Shadow bands are really interesting, and not everybody will see them. They don't happen at every eclipse. And in fact, they don't happen at every observing location. But what is happening is about 90 seconds to 60 seconds before the eclipse, the sun is more than 99% obscured by the moon. So basically, it's not a big light bulb in the sky anymore, casting out light in all directions. It becomes a slit of light that the light is coming to the Earth more linearly. And as the light bands go through the atmosphere, the denser and less dense parts of the atmosphere bend the light a little bit or refract the light, and it makes little rippling shadows on the ground that are really exciting to see. But you have to know when to look for them. They are only going to happen for about 30 or 40 seconds, starting about 60 to 80 seconds before C2, and then again right after C3, after third contact with the sun, is a slit. So that is not something you look up in the air for. This is not going to happen looking up towards the final crescent. You have to be reminded to look at the ground. They're going to happen on the ground in front of you. And that's why my app announces to look for shadow bands at 2 times. At 3 minutes, it announces it, because I want people to turn on a video camera at that point if they're going to try to video the shadow bands. But then at 60 seconds before C2, it announces to look for them again. And that's when you look at the ground. I recommend people bring a white sheet with them white sheet out in front of their observing group, because they're very low contrast shadows. You won't see them on dark grass or on an asphalt parking lot.
I'm going to be
you
on
need a,
golf, a
white sheet.
I'm going to be on a golf course.
So you
that's
can
fine.
Bring
just
a,
bring a white sheet.
Yeah, you can bring something to lay down. That's interesting that you are saying this, because it's almost like we have to have multiple cameras set up in order to catch all the things.
Well,
but I'm saying if you only have 2.5 minutes, you're never going to catch it all unless you really have a plan laid out of what you're going to do.
That's why the app comes in handy, I guess.
Yeah.
So, well, that's right. I mean, look, people can enjoy this eclipse on a lot of different levels.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be doing a lot of photography. I'm going to have about 5 other video cameras going for different aspects of the shadow and the shadow bands, and a 360-degree camera. And my son and I will be running high-powered cameras to get images of the eclipse. But you don't have to do that. I mean, I always recommend, even a family who just wants to observe, to bring their consumer-grade camcorder from home, put it on a tripod, and just let it start running at about 15 minutes before totality, because you will see the changes in lighting and the excitement of the crowd. When you hear people ooh and ah when it finally happens in that last 60 seconds before C2, I'm telling you, chills will run up and down your spine. It's the most amazing thing to experience, and the audio is wonderful. It's something that you'll cherish.
I have seen some of those on the YouTube, too. Talk about the beads. I can't remember. What do you call it? Something beads.
Yeah, Bailey's beads.
Bailey's
beads are a photographic phenomenon. It's not really a bare eye phenomenon. You need magnification. But it's a fascinating thing. So the surface of the moon, as you know, is not level. It has mountains and valleys. And those mountains and valleys are also then on the side of the moon, what we call the lunar limb. So as the last part of the lunar limb is going over the sun, and you're like 5 seconds before it gets dark, the last little bit of sunlight will come through the variation in the edge of the surface of the moon between the mountains and the valleys. And those are called Bailey's beads, the little bright pieces of sunlight that just peak between the mountains and the valleys of the moon.
Yeah.
But again, it's a photographic camera event, not a bare eye
All
event.
Right. So we'll look for those. I imagine there is going to be more research done with this solar eclipse than we've had in a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, an eclipse like this that's crossing the entire United States, and we have good communication and good roads, and people will be able to get to this eclipse, and you know, the state of photography is so much better than it was in the past. I mean, my first eclipses I shot with 200 speed slide film. To be able to shoot these eclipses with digital cameras and have immediate feedback is going to be wonderful. They'll be great pictures on
the
internet.
How about, will an iPhone camera work recording an eclipse, you think?
It will. I give a little talk about how to use it. The problem is you won't have a big zoom factor on it, but you can still use it. Now, you don't want to hold it. You want to put it on a little tripod and buy one of those little iPhone tripod connectors so the tripod can hold it for you. And then the little trick is to get a pair of those cheap solar glasses and cut out one of the eye filters. Just cut the cardboard. Just cut out one of the sides of the eyes. Don't take out the film. Leave the cardboard around it. And just tape that over your iPhone camera lens. So during the partial phases, when it's still bright, you will see the sun as a little yellow disk turning from a disk to a yellow crescent. And then at totality, remove that little piece of eyeglass protector that you put on your iPhone lens and take a couple of pictures of totality as best as you can with an iPhone. And then right after totality is done, you need to put that protector back on so you don't damage the chip in your iPhone camera.
Oh, so you can damage your iPhone pointing it at the sun?
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, iPhones don't have a big zoom, but it would not be recommended to keep your iPhone pointing unprotected, unfiltered at the sun for minutes or hours at a time. So you protect it with a cutout piece of your solar glasses.
Okay.
And for all of the partial phases, but then totality, you remove it and try to take some pictures of the corona and the eclipsed sun during totality without the filter. Then put the filter, tape the filter back on.
But just to snap a couple of pictures of the sun, you know, every few minutes without pointing it at the sun directly the entire time, that's safe for your phone, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, iPhones don't zoom in that much on the sun, so they're not concentrating the light as much as, like, a magnifying glass. But you wouldn't want to do it for the entire partial phases to have a tripod pointing at the sun, you know, for a long time. Now, the sun is going to move through the sky because of the Earth's rotation, so you'll continually have to recenter the sun if you have an iPhone on a tripod. But certainly, if people have not had time to practice sophisticated photography for this eclipse, I recommend that they try to shoot a little picture with their iPhone. Look, you'll cherish a picture that you can get of this eclipse for a long time. And iPhone cameras are actually quite high quality in terms of their megapixels.
Yeah, I imagine, if your first digital camera you took to a solar eclipse, it was probably how many megapixels?
Well, you know, I told you I used slide film for my first two eclipses, and the one on the cruise, it's hard to take digital pictures because the boat is constantly moving. But I did have a little camera running and the first high definition video cameras at the time. This is in 2006, and that little digital camera was 3.34 megapixels.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So where are you going to watch the eclipse?
Well, you know, Scott, I don't want to miss this one. And again, we talked about the summertime weather pattern. So I'm going to watch the weather this weekend and make my final decision. So I have prearranged places. I have six of them prearranged all along the path, everywhere from eastern Missouri to central Tennessee. So on Saturday night into Sunday morning, I will make the decision of where I want to drive to.
You don't trust those three-day weather forecasts, huh?
No, I do not. And, you know, the southern weather pattern in the southeast, there's just no big weather fronts that look like it's going to push through that we would know we were going to be in a bubble of high pressure. So you really have to go by the estimated cloud coverage data, and we'll just see. I'm hoping to just drive a little bit north to Tennessee and not have a long drive, but I really want to see it. It's a spectacular thing, and I recommend everybody try to get to it.
Oh, yeah. If you're driving down south right now, we'll just give it the Carbondale forecast. Intervals of clouds and sunshine.
Sure, and you can definitely see an eclipse during broken clouds, you know, those puffy white clouds. I mean, hopefully you wouldn't be unlucky that a big cloud would move over it right at totality.
Yeah.
But look, this is still a better shot than traveling overseas to go see one. And, you know, another thing about timing and my app, so I'm looking at Carbondale, and if I click on the fringes of the town to the western side where the shadow will approach from, so I get a C2 time that's starting at 20:01, so at 1 second after 18:20 in universal time. But if I click on the very eastern side of Carbondale, you see the time goes to 12 seconds. So there's a big difference if you're on one side of your town versus the other side of the town, even though, you know, the shadow is moving at about 1,500 miles an hour there.
Yeah.
So that's where exact timing and my app comes into play, because, you know, my app geolocates. When you get to your observing location, you tap to find your location, and then it calculates your precise contact times to within a tenth of a second. And then you load those into the timers to be talked through the eclipse.
All right.
So you see, there's a big difference between the western side of Carbondale and the eastern side of Carbondale. So precise timing is key, especially for photographers. If you want to catch the diamond ring and the Bailey's beads that we talked about, photographers have to start clicking their pictures 12 to 15 seconds before the calculated C2 time.
Okay. Hey, you know what? The app, is it simply called Solar Eclipse Timer?
Yeah, you can just search for it on the two app stores, Google and Apple, under Solar Eclipse Timer. And then I have a lot of resources on my main website, which I've run for this eclipse, which is the same name, Solar Eclipse Timer. So it's just www.solareclipsetimer.com. And that has links to the store, but it also has links to my YouTube videos, which are more instructional videos about how to enjoy this eclipse. And it also has a link to a page where I have segments of 8 of my lectures on eclipse photography, because I give a complicated lecture on eclipse photography, but I have my PowerPoint slides for 8 of my lectures on my website. So that can help people with some last-minute answers to questions about eclipse photography this weekend.
Okay, we'll put those links on our website. We're out of time, Doctor. Appreciate you spending some time with us, though. Very interesting. I'm looking forward to the eclipse, and I hope you get a good shot at it, too.
Good luck, Scott. I appreciate you calling me.
Thanks, Dr. Gordon Telpin.